The Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, is flying tonight to Germany for that summit. He joined me in the studio a short time ago. Prime Minister, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un reportedly said the ICBM test was a gift to American bastards on their Independence Day. What threat does North Korea now pose to Australia?
It poses a very real threat to peace in our region. This is a very serious escalation of the North Korean threat, another reckless provocation, and we categorically and totally condemn it. This is a yet another very dangerous move by North Korea.
North Korea says the test is the final step in creating a confident and powerful nuclear state that can strike anywhere on Earth. U.S. Secretary of State responded saying the U.S. will never accept a nuclear-armed North Korea. So is a military conflict on the table?
Well, it is certainly greater risk of that as a result of this test yesterday. So this is and the onus, the heaviest responsibility is on China. China is the nation that has the greatest leverage over North Korea. Now, China, of course, has condemned the test in very strong terms, and China maintains that it is complying with the United Nations sanctions, economic sanctions on North Korea. But the reality is this, that only China has the ability to bring North Korea to its senses. That's what we need. We need North Korea to be brought to its senses to stop this reckless provocation, to stop this nuclear program, which is putting the peace and stability of the whole region, indeed of the world, at risk.
Donald Trump tweeted that perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all. What does that mean?
Well, what it means is that China does have the ability to do that. I mean, it is
What's the definition of a heavy move? That's what I'm looking for.
Well, you'd have to ask him, but I can tell you what I believe it means. It means imposing the very harshest economic sanctions on North Korea.
Cut off their power or their gas.
That China is in a position to do all of those things. But really, the prospect of a conflict on the Korean Peninsula is unthinkable, but equally, it cannot. You have to consider it, you have to think about it, and recognise that only the strongest action from China can stop this escalation, this dangerous escalation by North Korea, absent military action. That is the reality at the moment. Now, the eyes of the world, as I've said before, are on Beijing, and I look forward to discussing this matter with other international leaders at the G20. So all of the relevant parties will be there. The new president of South Korea, with whom I've spoken recently, obviously the presidents of China, Russia and the United States, and of course the PM of Japan will all be there. And this is a matter that is going to occupy the attention of world leaders at the G20, I have no doubt.
South Korea and the US, in response to this ICBM test, fired their own ballistic missiles. China and Russia have issued a statement wanting a freeze on those sorts of joint exercises. What do you think is the solution there? Should they stop those exercises?
The only solution is for North Korea to stop its nuclear program, to stop its persistent and consistent breach of UN resolutions, to comply with international law, and to stop threatening and undermining the peace of the region. The reality is that, everyone recognises the reality, and it is simply this. China has the greatest leverage. China has the greatest responsibility. Now, I want to say, to be fair to Beijing, North Korea is not a compliant client state like East Germany was to the old Soviet Union. It's not. China faces a lot of difficulties in managing North Korea, but the position keeps on getting worse, and the Chinese are the ones with the greatest leverage. That's a fact. Now, the question is, how far are they prepared to allow North Korea to go down this road before finally they take the decisive action that they have the ability to take in a way that nobody else does and bring this reckless, dangerous regime to its senses?
Obviously, it's going to dominate the discussions at G20, but you're also hoping to push the case for tech companies to assist in combating terrorism. What precisely are you seeking?
Well, there are there are many issues, but there are two big ones I'll outline. Firstly, we need greater cooperation from the big cloud-based social media platforms and messaging platforms in preventing their platforms being used for the spreading of terrorist and extremist propaganda.
So what apps are you talking
about? We're talking about, Facebook and others. Facebook and YouTube, yes, that's right.
But their terms of service already ban hateful speech,
that's true.
Violence, and YouTube specifically bans terrorism.
That's true. But they need to do a better job at it, and it's a look. We recognise the technical challenges, but they need to do a better job on that.
Now, off authorities? Is that what you're saying?
They need to cooperate with authorities and obviously support authorities, and also take material offline. But let me deal with the harder problem, because I think in that area there is.
But just to be clear, you want them to, if they see the content, tip off Intel authorities.
Well, of course, people that are using these, you know, Facebook or whatever to promote extremist propaganda or terrorism or terrorist activities, plainly that's a threat to all of our peace and security, all of our safety. But I think there is a lot of goodwill in that area, and I think that there's good momentum. The area which is much more contentious is the question of encryption. Now, at the moment, as you know, we've got to a point where most of the internet-based messaging services, and I'm talking about services that everybody uses, like WhatsApp, like Telegram, like Apple iMessage and others.
Do you use those?
Of course, absolutely. Well, so does everyone else. Mm-hmm. But they are increasingly encrypted end-to-end, which means that that not only are they unable to be decrypted in transit, but the operator of the service, WhatsApp, in the case of that service, is not able to decrypt them. Now, what we need is, and this is a very hot political issue, particularly in the United States, whereas I've acknowledged there is a strong libertarianism both on the left and the right, and you see it in Silicon Valley. But the reality is, just as the rule of law prevails in the analog world, so it must prevail in the cyber world. And just as we are able, with a appropriate legal authority, with a court order, with a warrant, to get access to communications or confidential material that might be residing in somebody's safe or in their, you know, in the filing cabinet somewhere, so access should be able to be had to information, to messaging that is currently encrypted. Now, the proposition I've made to you now, I think, would be overwhelmingly supported by Australians. I think they'd say that's common sense. In the United States, there is this very strong libertarian anti-government culture. Now, that's one thing.
Well,
we cannot allow these systems to be used as they are at the moment to enable terrorists and other criminals to basically conceal themselves, to operate in the dark, a dark that we cannot illuminate. And the law must be able to reach into those dark crevices so that our agencies are able to keep us secure. And that is an issue that I'll be raising and other leaders will be raising at the G20.
We saw with the WannaCry virus, it was the NSA that weaponized that weakness in Windows. It escaped the lab and it was used maliciously. Mm. So why should we trust you and other governments to have this ability?
Well, we're talking about two different things.
But you're talking about decrypting encrypted messages for law enforcement purposes.
Yes, what you're talking about is different to what I'm talking about. So just please bear with me and I'll explain. Almost all software applications have flaws in them. That's why they're constantly getting patches and so forth. And a flaw that is unknown to others can be used by someone who knows about it to get access to it. That's why they're sometimes called backdoors, right? I'm not talking about that at all. So forget that. That is not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is lawful access pursuant to due legal process, in exactly the same way that if the police can get a warrant to place a listening device in your car, or to listen to a telephone call that you're having, that is all covered by the law. It's subject to heavy legal oversight. What we have the ability to seek an order of that kind with respect to encrypted communications. But of course, it doesn't help you if you can't get the communications decrypted. So
I'm not talking
about backdoors or anything that is any different from the very straightforward legal process we have at the moment.
But my point is, if decryption becomes available and you get that change, would you stop using WhatsApp?
No, because exactly the same way.
You wouldn't be afraid that another government would crack your messages?
No, because this would be the decryption has got to be available from the company. That it's obviously got to be done with due protection and due.
Would your internet cybersecurity advisor advise you against using WhatsApp if it's available to be decrypted by another government?
Well, it is only to be able to be done by in accordance with law, and in this case, this is a reality that you face, Matt. I mean, you have to ask yourself, are we prepared to say that the internet is to be a lawless, ungoverned space? Now, I say, and I think, I have no doubt, other leaders say, leaders of nations that are committed to freedom, democracy, the rule of law, like Australia, we must agree that the internet should not be able to be an ungoverned space where terrorists and criminals can hide from the law, because the law is there to protect us all. There is, you know, the law keeps us free. Our freedom is based on the law, and maintaining the rule of law in cyberspace is vitally important.
Finally, I want to ask you about Tony Abbott. He spoke at a Liberal branch meeting. Audio has been leaked to Fairfax. Mr. Abbott described your budget as second best, and a party that has to do what's second best because the Senate made us do it is a party which needs some help. Is Tony Abbott being helpful?
Well, I'm not going to comment on the gentleman you described, referred to, but let me just say this about the budget. The budget was a great success. It is a great Liberal budget. It's achieved substantial savings. We're bringing the budget back into balance. It has achieved a reduction in the rate of spending, the real rate of spending and the growth of spending, to the lowest level it's had for many years, 50 years, the Treasurer said today. It's also achieved considerable savings. Now, of course, you can't always get everything you want through the Senate.
Is it second best, though?
It is a great budget. It has been very well received. Think of some of the things we're doing here. We are reducing taxes on small and medium businesses, which employ half of all Australians. You know what Bill Shorten wants to do? Put them up again. So he's got no plan for investment and jobs. He wants to increase the tax on companies. He wants to increase the tax on people earning over $180,000 a year, whom he generically describes as millionaires. I don't think many people would find that a particularly accurate description.
We know Bill Shorten is trying to take you down, but is Tony Abbott undermining you?
Again, I'm not going to buy into personalities. My only focus is on the great outcomes that we're delivering.
It's not quite personalities, though, is it? Is he undermining you?
Again, I'm focused on what we're doing for Australians. Think about what we've done in 12 months. Think about how many people said, oh, the government will be in office but not in power. It won't be able to get anything through the Senate. It will be frustrated. Look what we've done. We have got laws through the Senate that we couldn't get through in the last Parliament. I had the courage to take the Australian Building and Construction Commission legislation to a double dissolution, and it is now reinstated and is the law of the land. My government has reduced personal income tax. It's reduced company tax. And what about education?
Will Tony Abbott ever feature in a Turnbull cabinet?
Look, again, I know your interest in the gentleman you describe, but I'm not.
You keep using that phrase. You don't want to say his name?
No, listen, please.
Gentleman
well,
you describe.
Well, you, this is your interest. My focus is on the 24 million Australians I'm elected to represent. I'm not going to get down into what Scott Morrison has described today aptly as background noise. I'm focused on what we're achieving, getting things done, governing and delivering. It's been a great year, a great first year in this term.
All right, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And Tony Abbott has already responded to Mr. Turnbull's description of him. He was on 2GB a short time ago.
He wouldn't comment on you by name. He said, I'm not going to comment on the gentleman you've described. Are you sure that he appreciates your input?
Well, Malcolm probably has his own way of showing his appreciation, but I'm sure that he does.
And he also added, the last thing I want to do is be difficult.